Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. We are down here in New Orleans, Louisiana. And we
sound like real locals.
We came down here. It's WrestleMania this weekend. We are here for Wale Mania.
Which, the whole thing is, I mean, he's got, like, you know, his own event, obviously.
Right.
We are not wrestling fans.
Correct.
So, like, you know, don't know anything about wrestling.
Here's what we know. We know a pile driver.
Yeah. Hitting people with ladders.
Mark.
The Miz. Which is not Les Mis.
Peckerheads.
Unless The Miz is with his wife.
Cheap Heat.
And in that case, it's Les Mis.
That's about it.
Yeah.
So, we're down here to interview Wale, but we were also invited to celebrate Currency's birthday with Currency and all of his friends.
Right.
So we get a heads up a couple days ago that the party is going on and we're on the list and we're excited. We're coming down. We'll make it on time.
Yeah, our flight is going to land like right as the party's starting.
It's going to be a fantastic party. And then yesterday morning, we get the actual invite, which says
black tie.
Black tie affair. So
not Tyrese.
We are like, yeah, we are like, all right, what can we do? We don't own tuxes. I guess we'll rent a tux. So I jump on Google, and all the tux places in New Orleans close at 6 p.m.
New Orleans.
Right before we land. So that's not going to happen. And we hit his manager, Musa, and we're like, yo, I'm really sorry. I don't think we're going to be able to make it because we're going to be underdressed. And he says, you know what? As long as you guys show up looking clean, you'll be good. Now, what's clean to you?
Clean to me is, well, we packed suits.
Well, because of this, we were like, all right, we have nice looking suits.
We're going to look real dapper. We're going to clean up.
We're going to hashtag clean up. So we're going to show up at our hotel, get changed real quick, and then head over to the party. But our plane was delayed about
an hour and a half.
So we're looking at the clock and we're like, oh my God, are we going to make this party? It's black tie affair. This is our friend Currency. We don't want to show up. We don't want to miss the food. We don't want to miss the festivities.
Yeah, we're expecting like trumpets.
We don't want to look like jerks, right?
Yeah.
We want to look clean. So we land an hour and a half later. We jump in an Uber and we make it to our hotel. We change like Superman, like just like in and out. Jump in another Uber, head to the party, get in the elevator, and we meet a guy who's in a tuxedo, has a nice chain on, and he's wearing Jordans. So we're like, you know what? We're doing all right.
Yeah, we're not looking as good as he is, but...
But that's all right. We're clean. We're clean enough.
Yeah.
Elevator gets to the rooftop. The doors open up.
There's a guy in a t-shirt.
So, you know, for all the rushing, for all the planning and prepping... For all the freaking out, we still look dope. We look clean.
Yeah.
No, we did. Okay, fine. Yes, we looked like we were going to a Sweet 16.
We looked like lawyers. We looked like we were like Rosenthal and Rosenthal.
We looked like we had just shown up at the wrong party.
Yeah.
We looked like the Currency we were dealing with was like accountant.
Oh, and by the way, so it should be said, like, you know, we walk in, Currency wasn't there yet.
Right.
And we walk in, and we're just looking for people that we know.
Which, by the way, at that point was like zero.
Right.
But you spot someone, and you're like, oh.
I'm like, yo, it's Chasen Cash, the producer.
The producer, he's from New Orleans.
He's our friend.
Let's go say hello to him. And I did say to you, Jeff, I said, are you sure?
And I said, yes.
And so I tapped him on the shoulder, and Chasen Cash turns around.
And it's his friend, not Chasen Cash.
So we're like,
hi,
and nice he goes, to meet you.
Yeah.
So that happened. But we did end up seeing a bunch of people that we knew. We had a great time. Currency's obviously the most fun, and he was super surprised to see us, super excited to see us. We're going to go hang out and ride in his lowriders either today or tomorrow.
Yep.
It was a very awesome welcome to his city. We are very much looking forward to the rest of our stay down here. Shout out to everyone in New Orleans. New Orleans?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, who's made our stay so great so far. Jeff, this is a bonus episode of the podcast.
Yeah, why not? You want to know what? Life is short, podcasts are cheap, so why not?
Today on the episode.
Today we have Neef Buck of the Young Guns, who brought with him, as a surprise guest, Freeway.
This was so dope. Like, we had been trying to make this Neef Buck episode happen for a while. Obviously, last year, we first met him at our Rockefeller event at Highline Ballroom, and we really took to each other. He's a dope dude. He has an amazing story, which by the way, we were so ready for, like, oh yeah, you know, the quieter one of the Young Guns, right? Maybe the
less known one of the Young Guns, maybe. But the thing about Neef Buck that we learned was that, you know, for whoever said, like, oh man, Neef isn't the better rapper of the two, he was the one who was more business-minded. He was the one that was putting them in places where they could actually make money. He was leading them to the bag, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was the one who would get them into meetings. He would get them deals. Like, he was that guy.
His tale of, like, man, rapping at a very young age, getting discovered in Philly, making his way to rap in front of everyone from, like, Puff to Jay,
Chris Lighty, Dave Lighty,
to making it to the peak. I mean, you know, Grammy nominated worldwide phenomenon that was Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
But also, like, he was making money before rap.
Oh man, like, how hard it is to quit the streets. There's a lot in here. Neef Buck's got a great story, and we had the bonus of having Freeway there to bounce Philly stuff off of and just have a good time. These guys drop gems. They tell stories about Jay that have never been told before. You get a new appreciation for Neef Buck and his career and him as a human being. What a dope dude. What a dope story, and we're thrilled to share this with you.
And also, it should be said, one of my favorite things about Neef Buck is that every time we see him, he's always like, guys, you have to put on the rock chain. I know how much you like it. It's like, oh, I guess that's just our thing, that we're the only two that like wearing a rock chain.
And you know what? He's right. Guys, yeah. Thanks as always for heading to iTunes and subscribing, rating, and commenting. It's so important, not just to, you know, our feelings, but it's also important to making this podcast as noticeable as possible on the iTunes charts. So head over there right now and subscribe, rate, and please comment. It really means something. Jeff, when do you want to get into this?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. I'm on a whole nother time, a.k.a. Oregano. Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Kick-Ass, Take Names, Collect Data, a.k.a. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Hey, what up, y'all? It's your boy, Neef Buck, the Trash Bag King, Mr. Favadu Me, Starbucks when I'm directing, one half of the Gunners, you know, state prop representative, I'm here.
Yo, and the best part is that we have another special guest. So yeah. Say what's up.
Holla at your boy, it's the one and only Bearded Wonder, a.k.a. Bearded Legend, a.k.a. the best beard in the business, the Philadelphia Freeway.
Yeah, this is a waste of time, with it's the real. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yo, Neef, what's good?
I'm good, man. I'm campaigning and maintaining. Favadu Me 9, it just dropped. I dropped it on my birthday, March the 30th.
Yup, happy belated.
Thank you, I appreciate that. I gave the people a gift on my birthday. I'm feeling good.
Yo, but the best news is that you and your city are celebrating one more time.
Yeah, for sure.
You are championship city,
yes,
right
we
now.
Yes, you see, I took off my Favadu Me clothing today, and I got some on, some Villanova. Shout out to all of, you know, Wildcats out there. Won that championship last night.
Yo, that's two in short order.
Right, real fast. They said it. They say it's the first time a city won an NFL Super Bowl and an NCAA Man's championship in the same year ever.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's after not winning for so long.
Oh man. We never won. That was our first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That was our first Super Bowl.
Yeah, Villanova too.
Yeah. But yeah, that's so the good. The city lit. The city on fire. So I think I dropped Favadu Me 9 right around the good time.
The perfect time.
Yeah. Cause we still got the flames going from the Eagles.
Yeah.
So you know, it's love in the city, man. It's wide open. I'm just happy.
So any of the Eagles can get like a free meal around the city whenever.
Oh yeah, it's laid out. It probably been laid out for him before the the championship, before the Super Bowl. But just being a part of that, man, like, you know, I went to me and my family got a ritual. We go to Atlantic City and watch it every year. So I was just with my family and to celebrate and for us to win it, man, and just being around my family. And they diehard Eagles fans, my aunt and stuff like that. So we was just lit out there.
Yeah.
Rented a big suite and we did it big.
How are the Flyers looking this year?
They looking okay. Even the Sixers. Look at the Sixers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think we just missing one piece. You know what I'm saying? I've been trusting the process for quite a while now. You know what I'm saying?
So, yo, that was a little rough for a while, though.
Yeah, it's been rough, man. It's been rough. You know, one thing about them athletes, man, that's a tough game. Is, you know, it's physical, you know, so, you know, you ain't promised tomorrow. That NBA, that ain't no joke. You know, that wear and tear them bodies.
Well, and so, also, you know, like, the reactions from you guys. You guys are notoriously just honest.
Yeah. We got the, man, that's a diehard city. And they serious about, you know, they teams and stuff like that. And they go hard. And if they love you, they love you. And if they don't, it ain't no gray. Mm-hmm. It's either black or white. You feel what I'm saying?
Yo, listen, I got to be.
They love you all the way or they don't.
I got to be real honest right now. I went to Syracuse University, and I love Donovan McNabb.
Right.
Right? Do you guys still love Donovan McNabb?
Yeah, yeah. Donovan, come party with us. That's my guy. He come party with us and chill out and all that.
Because he was close.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was
like, close. Like, once you from... Look how AI is to Philly. Mm-hmm. Like, AI feel like he's from Philly. Like, you know what I'm saying? No disrespect to, you know,
Virginia.
And stuff like that. But he was so instrumental to the city at a time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was just with him like 2 weeks ago. You know what I'm saying? He's just so instrumental in the city. And, like, they just love him, and it's just, like, felt like home. I know he do. You feel what I'm saying? Each and every time around. And he got so much close relationships with people that's, you know, like, impacted in the city. Like, so, you know, that's forever home for him, man. Like, every time he get the stand ovation, every time he go to a game, it seems like they raising his jersey. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Every time. Standing ovation, you know, encore. So, it's like forever, man. When you from Philly, same thing with Barkley, same thing with all the greats, Jet Doc, Dr. you know Jet, what I'm saying? Yeah. Everybody, it's just like, once you do your thing in Philly, man, you from Philly forever, yeah. man. We take you in.
You weren't singing the national anthem, but were you ever, like, you know, on the court for any of these places? Like,
half-time
were you halftime shows, doing any stuff like that?
Yeah, always, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm very, you know, instrumental in my city or whatever like that, and, you know, we support each other all. Like, we cool with all the guys that, you know, come in our city, and we hang out. And, you know, sometimes we club and stuff like that. So, you know, it always been love. I never had no bad experience with nobody that played for any of the teams in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You know, all the guys was cool guys. You know what I mean?
Well, let's take it back to the very beginning. Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from West Philly.
Okay. Yeah. Like, where?
52nd and Parkside.
And what is growing up there?
Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
Have you ever heard of Schooly D before?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
That's where Schooly D is from.
Crazy.
Yeah. Parkside, 5 for 5 too.
Well, that's Parkside. Like, that's a big thing to live up to then.
Man, who you telling?
So.
Who you telling?
So what's
so that's a tough neighborhood.
Yes. Yes.
So how big is your family growing up?
I got a lot of family. I got a nice-sized family in Philly, but my grandmom come from Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? My mother was born in Washington, but, you know, all her kids and most of us that's born in Philly, a lot of us was born in Philly, the ones that's in Philly.
Yeah.
But, like, the roots come from Washington and stuff like that. So I got a lot of family in D.C. But Philly, growing up in West Philly, Parkside area, like, that's why the influence on music was so, like, so strong when I was growing up. You know, either I seen, like, you know, the drug dealers be successful and stuff like that. And I took little pieces of them, you know, in my game and my hustle. And then Schooly was on the next block. Cool C was up the street.
Mm.
The Youngsters was a couple blocks over. So coming up in Philly at the time, like, everybody was from West Philly that was really rapping. Cool C, Steady B, you know what I'm saying? I could go on and on. Everybody that was getting on at that time, they was from West.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, it was believable. Like, this could happen. Schooly DJ lived right across the street from me. So seeing him come back from shows, bringing in crates of records and moving around, traveling the world, I knew it could happen. Like, this is a big chance. And then some things about the hustlers I ain't like. You know, they was getting the money, but, like, I knew niggas who, you know, had all the money, getting all the money on their block, but they mom lived on the same block they was getting all the money on. You, I ain't mm-hmm. understand that part. Yeah. You found, like, these different things, and, you know, just going to jail and just, you know, just certain things about the hustle, like the, you know, the street shit that I ain't agree with that night. So I took little intimates from that, and but the music shit, like, you know, I love that. And me and my brothers, we started off, I probably wrote my first rap when I was like 7-8 years old.
Really, that early?
For a long, long time.
So long time. Elementary school, you were thinking about music?
Yeah, I was doing talent shows at Heston Elementary School. Me and my brothers from day one. I remember one time, I don't remember this, but they said I cried when we lost one time. Yeah. I don't remember. My brother said we cried.
That's cried. I don't believe it.
Yeah. I think we lost to some dancers or something, but we was ill. We was super dope back then.
What'd you call yourselves back then?
We was the Little Devils back then.
Little Devils.
Yeah.
Were you in band? Were you in chorus also? Like,
no, we was just spitting, man.
Yeah.
We was just spitting. We was just raw and uncut.
By the time you get to middle school, is this something where, like, you're like, well, we can start, like...
Well, me and my brother, I moved, like, when I was, like, sixth grade. I think school started already, and that's when I met Chris at Gillespie.
Yeah.
That's when I met Chris at Gillespie. But my brother, we moved from North. Like, I was the type, we moved around a lot, you know, growing up. You know, it was hard, struggle. It was, like, good times. I had good times and bad times. Like, you know, my mom was a single parent, working jobs and doing what she had to do to feed us, to provide for us. So when but when my uncles and my aunts was home, we was like hood rich. Mm-hmm. Then when they went to jail, I was eating fucking leftovers for the week. You know what I'm saying? So I seen both sides. Like, so I appreciate shit. You know what I'm saying?
Where do you fall, like, in the family in terms of your brothers?
I'm the middle child.
You're the middle child.
Yeah, I'm the middle child. I got two brothers that's older than me and two sisters younger than me on my mother's side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then on my father's side, I got two younger sisters.
So what was that like? Do you have like the middle sibling qualities where you're like, you try and stick out?
I'm not sure how it played out, but you
what
know.
Did your brothers have to do in terms of like taking the lead when there weren't any adults around?
I always had older brothers, but I really fend for myself. Like I used to hang around guys that was older than my brothers. You feel what I'm saying? Like I my step pop was somebody in my neighborhood, in one of my neighborhoods, and my mother just gave me a long leash because she knew he was, you know, powerful in the neighborhood or whatever. So I got into shit, and I just always hung with older people. Like, I wasn't never in a situation where it's though like I had to go get my brothers.
Right.
I never been in situations like that. That's great. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. What was that move like for a 6th, 7th grader like that? That's a tough time to move.
Well, it was a little tough, but my aunt already lived in that neighborhood that I moved in. You feel what I'm saying? So I used to come up there at certain times. I didn't know many people, but I used to come up there at certain times. Chris and the rest of my crew from up there, they was the first people I hung around that was my age. And then when I moved up to that neighborhood, I was hanging around Chris' older brother and his friends.
Yeah.
And then once I got to going to school up there, you know, we all got, me and Chris, people my age got cool and we used to hang out. But I just always hung around people that was older than me, I guess. I think I was ahead of my time.
Cause that's, our stories are so similar. Cause you know, originally I'm from West Philly too, and I started going to school in North Philly probably like, I think it was like 9th grade or something like that when I went to Kensington. So our stories is a little similar on that point.
So you meet Chris, and what do you think of him right away?
He was one of the first. I was like militant coming from West. I was like real experienced. Like a lot of shit that they was doing, I was like, I wasn't on that. You know what I'm saying? I was just like so far gone, just hanging with older people, and I was experienced and exposed to so much more. And they was playing football. I never even played fucking organized sports and none of that shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? So they was playing sports and doing different things. And I came up there. I was the new kid, you know, his brother and all them took me, and all the old heads and all the older women, they love me. From up there, dressed fly, like I said, my aunts and them, they was hustlers, so I had every fucking thing, you know, at certain times.
What were you wearing?
I was wearing Versace. My 8th grade graduation, I wore a white Versace shirt with like some red Chinese letters on the back, some Guess jeans, and some tan butters like Freak got on right now. I was a different breed. All I wore was Tommy Hilfiger, polo. Like I said in my new shit, I said when Reasonable Doubt dropped, I was talking about my aunt. I said when Reasonable Doubt dropped, she had the silver GS. I was riding around the silver GS listening to Reasonable Doubt. But you know, it was times that she went to jail and all that shit was over. You feel what I'm saying? Moms had to feed everybody. You know what I'm saying? And I ain't never like put too much on my mom. My mom was a good woman. My mom is like more of a grandmom to the family. She hold everybody down and she play our part. But my aunts and uncles, they was the hustlers, and they, you know, did the extra shit for us. But I met Chris or whatever. Shout out to my friend Dave. Dave was the first person I really met, and he introduced me to Chris and everybody like that. And I used to rap all the time, and they was just like amazed by the shit. Like they never seen nobody that young and was talking like that, and that shit just like attracted them. Like, you feel what I'm saying? Like, they liked the attention that I got, and they like, he used to hit the drumming on the lunchroom tables in school and middle school, and I used to just go crazy. And it's just like, I think I never really asked Chris, but I think he liked the attention that I got from it. You know what I'm saying? Because I used to go on every corner and rap for the old. They just used to bug out. They used to just love it. And I think he liked that attention. So one day he was like, yo, like, you know what I mean? I want you to show me how to, like, you know what I mean? Do that shit or whatever like that. So I took him, rest in peace, my man Jug. My man Jug passed away. But I took him, my man Jug, and my crib. They like one of the first people I ever let in my crib. Because I was militant coming from West. Like, I ain't let nobody in my crib. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like. So I took them in the crib. I started writing their raps or whatever. I used to just, you know, jot them down shit and show them how to count bars and do different things and shit like that. And like the first couple rats I got in, you know, he start writing his own shit. every day after school, he reading shit off the paper to me, and he just kept going, kept on going, kept on going. And then he start rapping for people. People liked it, and then we going places. I'm taking him with me places, meeting people, and you know. And then I met a guy from West Philly that knew another guy named Stevie G that was managing Beanie Sigel at the time, and he was getting people record deals.
How old are you at this point?
Probably 13, 14, something like that. So me and my brother wasn't in a group no more, but you know, that was my brother. Like I was ready to say that earlier. Like everywhere I moved at, I put my feet down. And like, so when I was in West Philly, you know, I put my feet down, and when I went to North, I put my feet down. But I always would go back and forth. My brothers, they was from West, and when they moved up to North, they always stayed in West though. They wasn't trying to do their thing wherever they was at. So me and my brother was still rapping, but we wasn't really a group. And we met with these guys from out West that knew Stevie G. Stevie G is from Southwest. And me and my brother rap for Steve. He loved us or whatever. He was like, you know, like, yo, come by the crib or whatever like that. And so we could sit down and talk, because we rapped in front of this hair salon called Talk of the Town. It was real big in Philly on Lancaster Avenue. And we rapped for him. He loved us. He wanted to do something. But me and my brother was separate. We wasn't together. Like, we was both solo, right? So I told Steve, I was like, yo, I got a partner too, but I ain't had no partner. Chris was just my guy. You feel what I'm saying? I was like, I got a partner too. But I knew how dope me and Chris was together. I knew he knew my raps. I knew his raps. And it was something different. It wasn't really no young guys groups together at that time. I come up like real hip hop head, so I just thought that would be dope than just a regular another solo young guy.
Or were you a little bit afraid to do it on your own?
No, I was already doing it on my own. Like when I rapped for him before, you know what I'm saying? Before I took Chris with me, I was just doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like that's what I love to do. Plus, I was in so many situations before that one. You know what I'm saying? I had so many opportunities where it almost working out a contract and it don't. By 14. Yeah, I was, man. I remember one time, me, my brother, and my other guy, Rafiq, my friends that was in Little Devils with us. He doing life right now. He's incarcerated. Shout out to him. But me, him, and my brother, I remember a time we was rapping on 49th and Reno. We was rapping on my porch, and that's all we did. Like, that's why I don't understand this certain generation right now. Like, all we did was rap. That's all we wanted to do. So one day we on my porch rapping, just out there sharpening our skills, you know, still sharp as steel. Some guy would come riding down the block, all assing. He back up, get out the car, come over there and listen to us. The next day I was at Nate from Boys the Men house. He was married to his sister. The next day we was there. They trying to put the paperwork together. You feel what I'm saying? But that's what this new era gotta learn. Like, some people like think the shit gonna be handed to them. Like, everywhere we was at, all we did was rap. Like I said, my aunts and them was hustlers, so we went to every show there was, every powwow, every show there was in the city. We was everywhere, and we would rap whenever we got the opportunity to, in front of everybody. You feel what I'm saying? Wasn't no pride, it wasn't no egos, no image. We was trying to, we just going hard. You feel what I'm saying?
Yo, Free, how big is Philadelphia really as a city? Like, do you know that there's these other dudes around town who are nice?
Well, I did, because we used to, when I was young, we used to, like, travel around the city and try to battle other rappers. Like, especially, like, in the summertime, they had, like, basketball leagues at, like, 52nd and Parkside, 16th and Susquehanna. Mm-hmm. So while they was balling, we was having rap battles at the same spot. Anybody who wants it. It was crazy, man.
Yo, just do like a quick like 100 bars right now. Just quick 100 bars.
Big difference is I get a check for that now.
So you found your way, like, you know, Northwest, wherever, you would just go and battle.
Yeah. So Philly, you know, North, South, West, it's not too, it's a big city, but it's not that huge like how New York is. So,
right.
You know, you can move around the city freely.
Yeah. But I didn't know, like, if you would, like, run into someone and you were just like, oh, I'm gonna see that person, like, later on again because they're nice. And, like, later on it turns into, like, Chris and Neve or something like that.
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talent in the city.
That's how you met Mac. How you talking about
yeah,
you
that's
met
how
Mac?
I met Mac. We was at a club called Dances. And some people was on stage battling him, trying to double team him. So I'm in the crowd like, I got you, I'll help you. So he pulled me up on stage and I started roasting him.
You didn't know him before?
No, I didn't know him before that at all.
He just trusted you and said, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
That's wild.
And I started barking on him, nigga. We've been tight ever since then.
Yeah, whatever happened to the other dudes?
I don't know. Nowhere to be found.
So Stevie G thought what?
Well, Steve, I brought Chris the next day. Probably two days something later, and we rapped for Steve. And like I said, we had records where we was going in and out on songs, but we wasn't a group. But we just knew each other's stuff from being around each other. So I just knew it was dope. I just know dope shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I knew this was different. I knew this wasn't right then in hip hop. I knew this was needed. I knew this would be all right. You know what I'm saying? So Steve wanted to do it. He like, yeah, I like it. Let's go up. Let's start shopping it.
So were you Chris and Neef? Were you Neef and Chris? Were you like?
No, I came up with Young Guns.
You came up with it?
Yeah.
Right then and there?
I ain't sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like this the first day or whatever, but yeah, I came up
and
with
Chris
that.
Was immediately into it?
For sure. Hell yeah.
I mean, he better have been. You were the one that offered him the idea of being in the group.
Hell yeah. But I ain't never asked him, but I think he liked the attention. You know what I'm saying?
So I think. What did Stevie like want to do with you guys?
Well, this is the kicker. This is my guy, Steve, though. I'm doing a documentary. He just did an interview for me like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
This is my guy. You know what I'm saying? Helped change my life, gave me like opportunity. But we didn't know. Me and Chris were so young. We was 14, 15. And we didn't know. Steve was he was managing a lot of groups or whatever, getting them record deals. He had got my brother and a girl named Nina Ross. He got them a deal at Priority. Before me and Chris inked our deal,
wow.
Or whatever, like so he got most wanted a deal,
wow.
Like all types of people from Philly. He was real instrumental in a lot of shit that was going on in Philly hip hop at that time. And we didn't know the first people we went to see was Jay Biggs and Dame. We went to see them first, and then we went like everywhere else. We went shout out to Chris Lighty, rest in peace. Mm. Shout out to Dave Lighty and Puff. Everybody, like Rough House. Everybody wanted us. And we couldn't. Jay and them, like, we really liked them. Like, Jay, they was ready. Jay just sold 5 million records on, you know, Hard Knock Life. He was ready to roll out for Hard Knock Life tour, like, a week. You know, they was rolling out, like, in a week. So we went up there. We go crazy. They wanted us. They wanted to do it. All three of them was in office at the time, and they was telling us like, I guess it was like unbelievable for us to be rapping like that so young and the shit we was talking about. So I don't know if they believed it or not. You know what I'm saying? So they was like, come back up. They was like, can y'all come back up in a week with 5 records? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like real records, like. We came back up in 5 days with 5 records, but they wasn't recorded. We memorized them all with the hooks and everything and performed them for them.
God.
Yeah. And they wanted to do the deal, but when it was time for business, we stepped out the room. We had to step out the room. And after a while, I learned that Steve was trying to get a production deal. He wasn't trying to keep managing groups. He wasn't trying to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, managers is cool, but he wanted to have his own situation.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? He wanted a company. He was starting this company called Against All Odds. So we learned that after a while, after Steve wasn't our manager no more, and we switched managers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then we learned that. But
so
we
didn't have
know.
Anybody looking out for you guys, like, other than
like
Steve?
Like, nobody's looking out on contracts and stuff?
Nah. We used to leave. Man, Chris used to leave out of school, cut school. In the middle of school, I used to leave out of school to go up New York to get records deals, to rap for labels all the time.
You so like fifth period, you duck out, and then, you know, by seventh period, you're in front of Puff.
That's how it was. No bullshit.
And you're rapping for them all.
Rapping for them all. And they all wanted to do it, but we just couldn't figure out why this shit wasn't happening. I remember like it was yesterday, Chris Lighty and Dave Lighty, they came. They had 2 500 coupes. They drove them back to back. To Philly, took our moms out and stuff like that. We rapped on we did verses for the first Violator album, but they didn't work out the deal, so it didn't happen. I'm talking about this before we did records with Turk and Wayne on the strength of Chris Lighty and them. Busta, in the studio with Busta and them. This way before Rockefeller, people don't know this shit. Mike Son, it was all over there. We was doing a Violator album.
In the studio
album.
With them.
We was doing a Violator album all together.
You niggas don't have your driver's license.
Niggas
yet.
Was just coming in doing verses. I'm talking about Busta coming. He coming and murder shit and just roll like, you know what I'm saying? Just before Mike Son was locked up, all this shit. We sitting in there with them, and you know what I mean. And it just, you know, I think Steve just had other plans. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, how'd you feel when your verses didn't end up on that Violator album?
Like I told you, man. Like I was rapping for a long time before I met Chris, so I had so many opportunities that didn't work. So I was already built for it tough. Like it wasn't never like.
But you still knew promise. At some point it was gonna happen.
Yeah, for sure. My mother did, my whole family, that's all the fuck I did.
Crazy.
You know what I'm saying? That's all the fuck I did. Like, you know, we played music nonstop, rapped in the house nonstop. My mom never was like, turn that down. She was never like that. She knew that was the way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Free, when's the first time that you meet the guys?
When the first time we met?
Let's fast forward. He was incarcerated, so you got to fast forward a lot of shit. You got to fast forward a lot of shit.
I know I went to rap for Jay with a bunch of people. Like, it was like me, Indy 5, Petey Crack. There's a bunch of other, like, some other Philly rappers. Jay loved my, when I spit for him or whatever. I got locked up. Probably a little bit after that, I met them. We was in Philly, probably at the Black Friday studio or something like that.
Black Friday studio. We was there.
It was before State Property. It was actually State Property.
Yeah.
And we were just working on music. Everybody was just coming together, just working on music.
Yeah. But you had never met them, like, in your travels beforehand?
I don't think so, no. Yeah. I heard of them, but I never met them. Yeah.
As the Young Guns?
Yeah.
Wait, I want to, even before all this.
Because he was from West Philly.
Yeah.
Even before all this, what are your thoughts when Fresh Prince of Bel-Air goes on NBC?
Oh, it was dope, man. Listen, like I tell you, he damn near from the neighborhood, same neighborhood. He right up the hill. So him being the first hip-hop artist to win a fucking Grammy and shit like that, like... You know, you got to respect that, man, and see what he, you know, what he did, what he took the shit from the music and to where he at now, man. You got to salute that, man.
Yeah, but are you a little bit bummed that he had to be run out of Philly to go to L.A.?
I don't think he was run out of Philly. I wouldn't say that.
What?
I don't say he was ran out of Philly.
Do you know the intro song? The intro song is all about he was run out of Philly.
Oh, you talking about? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I'm not a
character.
Yeah, I'm not talking about.
Still got family there. You know what I mean? Got businesses there, you know. Well, that I don't go nowhere. Well, from Philly.
Yeah.
You know what are the biggest differences between West Philly and North Philly?
Well, to me, my personal opinion, because I lived in West Philly before I started being down North Philly a lot, and West Philly to me, or at least when I was coming up, it was like a little more middle class. Like North Philly is just fucked up. It's just like grimy. Like everybody on welfare. And just, like people in West Philly, your parents both might have a job. You know what I'm saying? And they trying to work towards having a good family. It might be different now, but that's how it was when I was young. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's similar to Neve too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you're in front of Jay and Biggs and Dame and a deal is like a reality.
Yeah. Jay had on a do-rag. He had on Iceberg. That's when they was calling him Iceberg Slim. Mm. They had platinum jewelry on. Biggs had a platinum bracelet with a ring. And Jay Biggs was just sitting there. We didn't even know who the fuck Biggs was. Like, you know what I'm saying? We knew Dame from seeing him like on videos and stuff with Jay. We knew who Jay was. And he was just sitting there, just like, you know, just really in tune with the music. Like that nigga like really loved that shit. You feel what I'm saying? Like he really got a passion. Like that nigga live and die that shit. Like a lot of people don't know that. Like they probably don't think, you know what I'm saying? Like he's really, you know, like if you rapping for him, you getting his total attention. Like he's really like into that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what were your expectations though from them?
Well, everywhere we went, like everybody, they wanted to do it. They loved us. They were snapping. They was going crazy. Like, but like I said, when it was time to talk business, we had to step out the room. So we didn't know what was being said.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like we learned after a while, but I'm gonna fast forward a little while. So these guys, Sadiq, rest in peace, Real Roller, they had a production company with Rockefeller called Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they was managing Beans. And they had Oskino and Spark signed to their production company, Black Friday. And It's another guy from my neighborhood named E that got an impact in my neighborhood. Sadiq from North Philly. Sadiq knew him. He knew he was from my neighborhood, Nicetown, Winkahocken. So Sadiq reached out to E and said, Jay and them still want them young boys. I need to find them young boys. I knew E. We, you know, nothing too close, but he fuck with me. I fuck with him. He old here around the way getting money. You know, I was who I was, and he called me. I don't know how he got my number one day. He called me and was like, where you at? He rode up on me, Money Green, 500 coupe. Rode up on me. I got in the car. He told me Sadiq and them, they was, you know, looking for us, and they still wanted to do the deal, and could he be our manager? I said, come on with it. Went and found Chris like always. He ain't nowhere to be found. Went and found Chris. And you know, he was with it. 3 days later, we was on State Property 1 movie set.
What was your relationship at that point with everyone in State Property?
Well, I knew Sparks. Sparks used to, like, I got a record on Forever Do Me 9 when I talk about how I first met Sparks. Sparks was hustling in my neighborhood, Parkside, 52nd mm-hmm. Parkside. He used to hustle, and I said, I forget what I say on the, it's called, Damn It Feel Good to Be a Gangster on mm-hmm. Forever Do Me 9. When y'all get a minute, check that out. I said, first time I met Sparks, freestyling off malt liquor. He used to push his pistol and hustle. That's my nigga. You feel what I'm saying? He used to sit on the corner and like, back in the days, drinking 40s and stuff like that. That was cool for a young nigga. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, young niggas used to do shit like that. Yeah. So, you know, he used to hustle and be on the corner drinking 40s, freestyling all the time, just talking shit. It seemed like he really wasn't, like, wanted to be a rapper. He just knew how to do it. It used to just come to him or whatever like that. And, you know, I knew Sparks but other than that, you know, I just heard about everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I never crossed paths with them in the streets, though.
But then you're, like, in a group with everybody.
Yeah, when it came to that, like, when we got on the set, that's when I first met O, and Free was incarcerated, and Petey Crack wasn't down. He wasn't down yet. Nobody met Petey yet. Petey was down the line. And, like I said, me and Chris had real small parts in that because, like, they just brung us back on because they had to look for us. And, you know, the management we had, it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So Oskino and Sparks was around. They was going to do the deal with them. Like I said, they were signed to the Black Friday mm-hmm. shit, you know, the production deal that they had that was under Rockefeller. And so they got Lee and Rose in the motherfucking joint, if you check it out, on State Property 1. So we did that. And by that time, by that time, I think Free Musta came home after the movie, and we started going to the Black Friday studio in Philly. Everybody was doing records and all that together. I wasn't with it at first. Wasn't with it at all. I don't know, man. I don't know if it was my upbringing or just how it was. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Militant, yeah.
Yeah, I just wasn't thinking like that. I don't know. Like, it's just like I wasn't really like to go with the flow of just being around motherfuckers that really I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, like, I just really wasn't, like I said, I was in so many situations before. It was just, like, different for me. You know what I'm saying? And then when I came on, I was like, yo, me and Chris, we met Jay Biggs and Dames before we met any of them. We doing a deal with them. Let's do the deal with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But y'all telling me I got to be around six other motherfuckers that I don't know and
from your city.
do songs with and just hang out with, like, yeah. Everything cool. I really wasn't with that shit.
Yeah. Did you view him as competition?
No, I ain't know him. That's how I viewed him.
But like, as like, oh great, like another four guys that I have to, you know, battle for. No,
I wasn't with that shit. I wasn't trying to be around it. I was on State Property 1 album one time.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't with that shit at all.
Is that a reflection of the time that you spent or did not spend in the studio?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were just like, cool, but nah.
And I was getting money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was doing other shit like motherfuckers like. Like, you know, it's just hard to drag you when you get money in the streets and you're around motherfuckers who like got money that you think they got money like rappers. They moving like rappers. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? They got the same cars as rappers. Jewelry, you feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Certain shit. Like the nigga that we was managing, he had the same jewelry Jay and them had on. You know what I'm saying? We going to meetings. This nigga got platinum Rolex. You know what I'm saying? All types of shit like that. So it was just, I don't know. This is my mind state at the time.
Did anybody try to talk you into it?
Yeah, all the time. What? I used to be grounded up all the time. All the time. And it's funny that Freeway here, because Freeway the really one that really gave me a chance and really like believed in me and like seen something in me, and like, just, I don't know if it's because, you know, our religion or our beliefs and stuff like that, but he just always, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got a big opportunity on Philadelphia Freeway, his first album, mm-hmm. on Full Effect, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Full Effect is just like, to this day, it's like a classic. It just means a lot to me, you know what I'm saying? It was the first joint that was like, this is it, like, well, you know what I'm saying?
Well, Free, I mean, like, what are your thoughts at this time about, you know, being in a group larger than yourself, and also about also talk about, you know, extending your hand to do Full Effect?
I mean, by the time we did Full Effect, I looked at them like family by that time, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just more so happy for the opportunity, you know, to be able to get on. I was looking at it like, I'm gonna do my thing regardless. I don't give a fuck who else is gonna be here. And you could tell by the way I went in on when you did Hot 97 and all that, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I probably was a little more open-minded about it than Neef was, mm-hmm. but, you know, we come from different backgrounds or whatever, so.
When you did that Hot 97 freestyle, did you know what kind of platform that was?
Yeah, Jay told us, like, get y'all raps together, we going on Hot 97 on Monday, and y'all better kill it. So, you know, I was prepared for it.
How did you guys all travel up there?
I think we rode together, if I remember. We used to ride together all the time, like Turtle Tops.
Hmm. Was laid out like a rug right back there.
Yeah. Bunch of straps. We was drawing, doing too much. We probably still be locked up if we'd have got pulled over.
So many fucking incidents, boy.
Well, so what was it? What was the big sort of like key moment that made all of you guys like come together as like as one?
I think the time, man. You grow to love a motherfucker. The time,
yeah, just being around each other, you know.
Just being around each other, like, it's that love. Like, just after a while, you be around motherfucker. You love them for they flaws and everything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He's just brothers. Like at the end of the day, then we was the Philly squad.
Yeah.
We had to stick together. Bleak had his squad. Jay, you know what I'm saying? How the fuck we gonna be separated? At we up here in New York. Like, we gotta stick the fuck together.
So, who from Rockefeller was looking after you guys?
Really looking after, I don't think nobody was really looking after us. We was wilding, couldn't control none of us.
Not Emmanuel.
Well, you know they we had a lot of people like that in our corner that was like they like sisters to us to this day. Emmanuel, Sherry, Shaka, there's a lot of people, you know, Carlene, everybody. They was family to all of us and still is to this day. You know what I'm saying? And they would be there for us. They worried about us and you know stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because they, you know, they're like a relatively like close knit operation, but you know, 2 hours away from you guys.
Yeah, it was family, man.
So how
family.
Did they? How did they make sure to check in and make sure that you guys were like, you know?
I remember when we first like got, they gave us all two-way pages and phones and all.
We all be two-waying each other. And we'd be in New York a lot. Like, yeah, we'd be back and forth, spend a lot of time at Baseline, coming back and forth, doing other things with them. So
there's times we lived in hotels out here for months and shit. This was us, man.
Was it your own room or were you sharing rooms?
No,
or
we had our own rooms. We had holes, man. We had holes coming in and out, man.
What? Sometimes the same ones. Like,
yeah, what? You know?
What you doing in Neef room?
It was going down, yeah, for sure.
So, like we talked about at the Highline show last summer. And first of all, actually, I want to talk about one moment that like stood out among many moments that night, which was like just an epic evening for everyone in the room, everyone who's heard it, watched it, and like certainly for us, who, you know, we would have done that with no audience
right,
there
for sure.
But that we had 600 people who felt the same and. But you walked on stage and you walked right to Biggs because you hadn't seen him for maybe a decade.
Oh, I forget how much time he did, but it was a while.
But a while.
It wasn't a decade, but it was some years. And it was my first time seeing him, and I wrote him when he was in jail and stuff like that. And I never forget what he did for me and Chris Carrera. He was very instrumental in me and Chris' first album. Like, he, you know, was real, real instrumental in everything that we did. The records that we picked, the records that rolled out first. It was his idea to get enough to host Youngest in Charge mixtape, which had Can't Stop Won't Stop on it. And, you know, it was his idea to bring it back to Jay and Dame, that we white labeling this, we going with this. Enough is Planet. Grammy nominated, took us all around the world, moved my mom out the ghetto, changed my life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, gotta give it up to Biggs, you know what I'm saying? Like, real, real impact.
No kidding.
A1 dude, shit. Man. Yeah. Most definitely. Big's a good brother, man.
So one of the things that we talked about on stage was the schedule that, that happened at Baseline. And there was that very real thing where Beans at 1 o'clock in the morning would be like, you guys up? And they'd be like, yeah. And he'd be like, all right, cool, I'm coming. Were you guys on that same schedule? Were you guys rolling with, like, Beans in the middle of the night?
Yeah, hell yeah. It was whatever, whenever. There's times that we was recording on other people's budgets all the time. It was just whatever. Like, if nobody wasn't using the shit, niggas would load up beats or get beats from Ramsey or Big Face, whoever, just go in. Just over there, like, let me get a beat, just go over there and record it. A-Rum, B-Rum.
Shit, if it was back in the day, we'd probably be heading over there right after this.
Yeah, exactly. That's just how it was. Like, that was
probably be coming from there.
Yeah.
So what sessions would you sit in on that weren't yours?
Everyone. We seen Jay do fucking damn near everything. Everything. Like, that's how Free got on, motherfucking one eye on us, to being there. Mm-hmm. Being there. It wasn't never like being in you on this. It wasn't never like a you on this, nigga. If you can go on there and kill that shit, then you already prove yourself. You feel what I'm saying? It wasn't never like given to you.
Planned,
like, yeah. All the perks was given to you later, but the fucking spots on the records wasn't given to you.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That ain't going to work. It's so many people. I think fucking there was people on, I think it was Oskino on Rock the Mic before. Was it Oskino? Sparks? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was like still sharp as steel, man. You had to, like, you know.
Were there any verses that you guys had that didn't make it onto songs?
I don't think I can remember that.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I don't think I had any songs.
Was that like a tough environment though?
I think I, like, on Beans when he was doing a reason, I was trying to put a verse on everything. So I think some of that probably didn't make it. But other than that,
do you, either of you guys have a really good Big Face Gary story?
Oh man, so many. One was when I was telling them on the way up here when I ain't know if you ever seen that shit on Choke No Joke put it out when he was ready to fight.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
ready
yeah,
to
yeah,
fight
yeah.
that time.
Oh, yeah, he was ready to fight.
Rata's guy named Rata. He was managing Oskino, I think. And O was snapping about the clothes and then it turned into a whole fucking fight. Yo, that shit was crazy.
Rata, he actually run the label with Jalil.
Oh, crazy. Philly,
tandem.
Yeah. Yo, that shit was fire. It's online. You can look that shit up.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
That
you know
shit
we're rock
funny.
Nerds. Come on.
But listen, though, the shit is so funny that, like, when I look back to the video Free, me, you, and Chris, we ain't paying them no mind. Like, we not paying. Like, if you.
Because was that happening, like, all the time?
Kind of, sort of. But yeah. we was just, like, I think we was on a different.
Yeah, we weren't worried about getting the clothes.
We was different. Free album was out. I think me and Chris was ready to drop. It was
probably
a different.
I was getting like 15
yeah,
a show
we,
right
we,
then.
We weren't worried about that shit. We could buy our own fucking clothes. You know what I'm saying? We was cool. We was getting shit, tons of shit. It's like, if you go back and watch the video, y'all, you're going to see me, Free, and Chris walking around not paying them no fucking mind. Yo, that shit. It's so funny though, Free, when I look at it. Like, we just walking past, doing shit, grabbing shit, just doing us. They really, like, got the whole shit going crazy, fighting and grabbing and pulling, falling on the ground. And we ain't paying them no fucking mind, yo. That shit just blew my mind.
What was your guys' relationship with Lenny S at the time?
Oh, S is a guy. S is, you know.
S always been one.
Always been there.
Day
like,
one, man.
Like,
same dude, good heart.
Yeah.
Good brother. He actually on my documentary, too. I'm putting out a documentary with my album, Think Free. You know, I touch base on my situation with kidney failure and everything. So Lenny S, one of the guests on there too. Shout out to him.
And that's coming out soon, right?
Yeah, it's real soon.
Yeah.
I'll be back to talk to you. It's about
you. I'm just solidifying that. Yeah.
Most definitely.
Soon, right? Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. It's coming down real soon.
Yeah. Did Lenny bring you guys records? Was he looking
yeah,
out?
Yeah, hell like? Yeah. We if we needed something, we go to them. Lenny S, hip hop, everybody, like any A&R. It just so
big
happened.
Face, yeah.
Yeah, Big Face. It just so happened that Ramsey got us the Can't Stop, Won't Stop from Digga though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That really changed the shit.
And
that changed everything.
Did you know when you recorded it that was the one?
We put that shit on a mixtape, 17 tracks. It was number 16. If you feel as though something is the shit, you're going to put that shit first, second, third, fifth. We didn't know what the fuck it was going to be. We threw that shit out there. But if you listen to it, we recorded most of it in Quiet Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And Biggs got enough to come in and host it. He put the shit on. He listening to it. Everything is like all the feeling and like the reactions to every song is real. Like, he didn't go rewind shit, let me do this record. He played the shit straight through and ad-libbed and said whatever he wanted to say through the whole project. They ran the whole shit through. You feel what I'm saying? So when he got, if you go back and listen to it, he got the Can't Stop, Won't Stop, and he say, oh, I like this. Like, because it was first time hearing it.
Yeah.
Like, he natural hearing instinct, it right there, yeah. Natural instinct. Next day, he was blasting that shit off on Hot 97. He white labeled that shit up, put that shit out. Me, Chris, and Dane was on MTV red carpet. Dane was going to fuck crazy. Nigga, I got the best young niggas out. They niggas top in the top three Rockefeller records history. All them fucking records. One of J records, I forget what it is. Oh boy, Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
Crazy. So talk about the difference in your hometown between just being signed to Rockefeller and when State Property is hitting and then Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
Well, that shit took it to the another level, but it was like fucking, it was just different levels, but it was like, well, from Jay, like, saying all he need is Freeway, Chris and Neef, and we running this rap shit. That shit was just like, from the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest nigga in the game saying that type of shit from the get this, yeah. Before, like,
unreal.
Like, it was just all like, and then like, we ran around with Jay and him and did, and was like,
and by the way, that's not just on any record.
Fuck no.
That's on like the biggest, most important record.
Yeah.
So we was running around with them guys before we did actually had our actual albums out. So the fame was just there for a while, but then it just turned up to a whole nother level. You know what I'm saying? It just turned up notches. It just kept turning up.
Hmm. Did you ever have like people like chasing your car like as you ran away?
Still get that. Don't do that to me. Still get that. We tell them for free. We was just in Camden two days ago.
Yeah,
don't
man.
Do that to me, man. Don't do that to me. Baby. They still got the spreader, man. Don't do that to me.
We ride around the city in them things and everything. Man.
Don't do that to me. Yep.
When they did that that MTV like documentary on Jay, right? And Beans is like, and Beans is like, yo, yeah, Villanova,
yeah, we here, man.
Yeah, the double up on y'all.
But Beans was like, I will fight anyone for Jay, and he jumped over people, and like on that MTV documentary was just like throwing punches.
Yeah,
that's a reality. That's a real. That's not for the cameras.
That's how he was, man.
So he still is.
Yeah. Was that the case for like all you guys? Like once it was like Rockefeller.
Yeah, we was the shooters.
We was riding, yeah.
We was riding.
We were serious. We were strapped up every day.
Mm.
We knew you chopped the head, the body for. We couldn't let nobody try to come for Jay, man. Especially like it's different. Like I think like in that hip hop era, like a motherfucker could get their career crushed. Yeah. Like you know what I'm saying? I don't think so right now. You know what I'm saying? Because the people go for anything sometimes. Right. But I think you could get your you know, you can get your top cut off, your body fall, man. So we knew, like, you taking food from out of our mouth. You know what I'm saying? And that's what you're supposed to do as your young boys. Like, you know, he ain't supposed to have to go out there. You know, if you got the youngest, we got to go.
Yeah.
We got to go.
Did you ever find yourselves in beefs that you would not have expected? Like, you were in a beef with Cat Williams.
Nah, I wouldn't say a beef with Cat.
Serious beef with Cat Williams.
Though. That's funny, though, because we're... Beans had a show and Cat came. We ain't see Cat in like so many years. And Cat like Busta still was holding that shit. He came to me and Chris was like, man, I apologize. Yeah, and she was like fucking 12, 13 years.
Like Rockefeller is synonymous with New York City, right?
Right.
And you guys, again, you're 2 hours away, another like big city. You come back and you're wearing Rockefeller chains. You're representing Rockefeller. But Philly now is like your city.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about like Washington D.C. and say like they don't love their own. Like mm-hmm. A lot of like Washington artists who make it out are just like, yo, I don't understand like why Washington doesn't appreciate Washington artists. Did Philly understand and appreciate you guys in that era? Like, were you guys like, yo, this is our city?
Hell yeah,
we're wearing a New York chain, but like this is we're
well,
we're
part they of look that. At they look at people in Philly look at it like this is the second home for Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's the same. Like they love what Jay did for us. They love the fact that we was repping the city all over the world, you know. It was always all love still to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, you got your haters, you know, right. But for the most part.
But that's
yo, air them out. Air them out right now.
Yeah, ain't no love without no hate. That's just how it go. But I think one of the things that attracted us all to Jay, he was like he was from Philly. Like, he got a lot of, like, you know what I'm saying? We had similarity. Like, they wasn't like, you know, we went to a lot of people that want us, and I bet Free did too, but they wasn't just our kind. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? Real recognized real in a lot of situations, and it was just like us. They wasn't trying to change us. They was just, you know what I mean? They just loved and appreciate what we brought to the table.
Never tried to change.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it was just like, it was like us. You feel what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. it just worked out.
Free, what was the situation when 1-900 Hustler came out? Like, what was the big change for you before that record and after that record?
Oh, man. When that record came out, I remember I didn't know how serious it was. We was at a club. It was a Beans and Bleak show at Club Pegasus or whatever. And after they finished performing, this boy cousin, E-Mac cousin or whatever, was like, yo, do your verse off 1-900 Hustler. I'm going to tell you, they're going to go crazy. So mm-hmm. I got the mic, went to the front of the stage. First things first, watch what you say out your mouth. Then the whole crowd was like, when you talking on the phone, a hustler. I ain't looked back since.
When you guys get that co-sign from Biggs, and you had been, you know, with Rockefeller for a while, and you've been earning your stripes, but like, this was like a big change and shift in mentality for the whole label.
Yeah.
Were you ready?
Yeah, I think I was ready, because like I said, I wasn't really like with a lot of shit. So it's like, once Can't Stop Won't Stop happened, I knew it was, the focus was on us. It was about us. Like, cause we didn't know, like, when we all got together and they put us all together, I remember on a reason, Beans was probably working on a reason. We did the State Property 1 album. I think the reason might have came after that, if I'm not mistaken. And he was working on that. And I remember Dame telling me, like it was yesterday, he told me I had to be around Beans to get on the album. So it wasn't like handed to us. It wasn't like you were signed and you gonna be on this album. That didn't work out like that. So I didn't agree with a lot of things. I wasn't a part of a lot of things. I was like the black sheep of the crew at the time. And then when me and Chris did Young Is In Charge, and then Can't Stop Won't Stop, it was, the focus was on us. Like Free, once he did 1-900 Hustler, the shit was so big, the impact was so dope, we knew his album was gonna come out next. Nobody knew who album was gonna come out first. We didn't know nothing. It wasn't dates.
Remember the inserts, like in the CDs, like the physical CDs?
It's bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
It's bullshit.
They'd be like, yo, we got a million releases coming.
Yeah. Coming soon. Like bullshit. Open like XXL, and it's like 40 pages of albums that are never gonna come out.
Yeah. Like, did you see those too?
Yeah, hell yeah, we used to see them. You know what I'm saying?
Did you believe in them?
No, because things change every day.
Yeah.
Record companies is business. But once it got time for us, and I knew it was like time, and we start working on projects, budget open. Oh yeah, I gotta put some forth into this shit.
Yeah,
my time.
What did Wayno Clark mean to you back then?
Oh man, he's our little man. He was all feet. It's all feet. Any and everything. He was there for us, man. Mm-hmm. Any and everything. You know what I'm saying? I'm proud of him. Happy for him. It's my guy to this day. You know what I'm saying? He go hard, man. He loyal. You know, humble. Real humble, real loyal, pure heart, good guy.
Yeah. You know, we talked about last year how Wayno was the one who, oh no, we talked about it on the podcast. What's how that? Wayno was the guy who like looked out for you guys when a lot of people weren't at the label.
Yeah, he was just day to day with us. I remember I got locked up in New York, and when I came up to get my bell, he was there. Yeah, he was there.
He's a real one.
Nobody else, he was there, but they took care of everything, but Wayno, that's how I just know how he was important. I remember like it's yesterday. I wrote that in a rap. I got a verse talking about that situation. I got locked up with a fire woman in New York, and Wayno was with me, so they really kind of like was on his ass about it at the record company. Like, yo, like how you letting him? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he already of it, because we had the mind state of Philly. Like, we was going through stuff with other rappers up here, the Locks and all that. So our mindset was like, it's really, this shit real, for real. But I think, like, I don't think a lot of other people looked at it up here like that. They was like, that shit ain't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we in Manhattan all day. Ain't shit going over.
We was serious.
Yeah, we serious. Like, because that's where we come from. Like, that's all we think of, Art of War. So I got locked up, and they bailed me out. Wayno was there, and Jay sent an APB out on me to come right where he was at. As soon as I got out, I ain't washed up nothing. I don't know how he just, you know that shit. He put up the bat sign, the whole shit from baseline. So I had to go right to him. And when I got to him, he grind me up a little bit, but he grind Wayno up. most of it. Like, yo, man, how you letting him, you know what I'm saying? And I talk about that. The Streets Ain't For Everybody is a record I got with Trey the Truth that's on Forever Do Me 8. And y'all can go check that out when I talk about that. And that happened so long ago. But, you know, like, you know, different tracks and different shit bring out certain parts of your life.
So outside of the State Property family, who were you closest with, both of you guys, in Rockefeller?
I don't know because I have my relationships. We all have our relationships with everybody individually. You feel what I'm saying? So we was close to, you know, like.
Because when we did the live thing, like, it surprised us, like, that you and Jimmy had that, like, time together.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah. Like, we spent time, we all had our moments with each people, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I really can't say, like.
Like, how Biggs was influential to their album and everything. That's how hip-hop was to me. Yeah. Like, him and Guru used to be in the studio with me every day when I was working on Philadelphia Freeway. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And Just, me and Just had a great relationship.
When you guys started touring and that single was going everywhere, and then you went and shot on the ski slopes and all that, did you see it as like, yo, we're just gonna keep putting out like hit after hit after hit, and there's like no end to this? Or were you preparing for like, yo, we gotta get ready for this, for the next album? Like, what was your mindset?
We was just living it, man. As it came, it was nonstop because we went on College Dropout tour with Ye, but we went on tour with Jay damn near every year. So it was like nonstop hustling. Like I look at it like this. I'm gonna give you an example. It's artists that was going platinum, but Beans had more money than them because the opportunity that was presenting itself being around Hov. He had so many other doors, and Damon was so much was going on. Beans was going gold. He was having way more money than motherfuckers that was going platinum. Because if you don't, you know, the opportunities and different avenues and different ventures was opening up for him, and we stayed on the fucking road because Jay was going out every day, all day. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people wasn't getting that type of shit. You know what I'm saying?
We wasn't on the road with Jay. We was on the road with ourselves.
Yeah, so you know, it was like the best of both worlds.
Who picked up your mail at your house since you were like barely there?
Oh man,
Wayno.
Yeah, he's all Wayno.
So, what was part of that like process like? You hit TRL, you would do radio, you would do like
everything
in stores.
106 and Park.
106 and Park. I remember doing 106. I would look at them to this day. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes they used to try to get Jay to come. Like, you know, one hand wash the other. We'd do whatever y'all want us to do. That's how BET used to be. J-Co. You know, but, you know, every time I called that guy, man, every time, that nigga never let me down. It's so many times that I picked up the phone and needed him to do something, and he was there. Like, I tell, like, a lot of people don't know this story. We did a $2 bill tour. I think it was in Orlando, Florida.
That was the MTV shit.
MTV shit. Yeah. Us, Kanye, and somebody else, I forget who it was, but like I said, Biggs was real instrumental to the album, so I probably was talking to Biggs more than Dame and Jay at the time. I talked to everybody, but I think I was probably talking to him a little bit more just because, you know, the album stuff and what was going on, and he picked No Better Love to come out first off our album. He picked Chingy to do the remix for Can't Stop Won't Stop. Like, he was on his shit. Like he was waiting for that moment. Like, you feel what I'm saying? He was on it. Jay was doing so much with his shit, and then Rockaway was making so much money, Dame had to go over there to that. So he played his part at Rockefeller Records. And I asked him, I was like, yo, I wanna see if we can we can get Jay to come out to the $2 bill shit. And he was like, actually, but I'm thinking if I told Biggs would call him and like that shit would work itself out. Like, you know what I'm saying? He shut me right now. Go ahead, call him. Called Jay. I was like, yo, Jay, you know, they invited us to do the MTV $2 bill tour. So he like, yeah, that's what's up. Like he like, yeah, that's what's up. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. No matter how big of an artist he was and the shit he accomplished, accolades, sales, or whatever, when I used to tell him about some things that we accomplished or certain things, that the opportunity that we had on our own, man, he would act like, you know, it was, well, he would, you know, it meant a lot to him, and he would give it to me, like, you know what I'm saying, like, so happy for us, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, everything, like, I presented to him all the time. And I remember, man, me and Chris bought our first cars from the fucking, from the rap money. Mm. We was in the 44. That nigga came all the way outside and was looking at our cars like they was fucking Maybachs. You know what I'm saying?
Because they were Maybachs.
You know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? That's just how he was. He was like this happy for us, like little shit. Yeah. Shit that we, like, you know what I'm saying? He just was like that. But I called him and I was like, He was happy for me. He's like, yeah, that's what's up. Y'all got the, you know what I mean? I was like, I want you to come. You know what I'm saying? See if you can come. He like, all right. You know what I'm saying? But he didn't give me a all right, like, oh yeah, for sure, I'm coming. Like he was like, all right, you know what I'm saying? All right, this and the third. But you know, I played the office a lot. Like sometimes when I wasn't agreeing with everybody with the music shit, I used to sit up there in offices and soak shit in. I used to sit around the women in the office. I love women.
Yeah.
I love the business. You feel what I'm saying? That's what got me like molded into being, you know, the man that I am today. Sitting around Manuel, shocking them, Carlene and them, just learning shit. Trees, yeah, exactly. Trees, and just learning shit and being around them, and that's how I start having input on so many other things, but beside the music, you know what I mean? Beside
like the marketing and stuff.
Yeah, you know. So I found out through the grapevine that, you know, Jay was riding private planes back then, you know what I mean? Like every fucking where. And I found out that they had a budget for us to come, and they got everybody to come. The whole state property was on a budget to come perform with us.
To Orlando?
Yeah, Cam and Jewels, because they was on our album. It's like, you know, you know what I'm saying? They was like, you know, Jay ride private, that shit gonna cost, you know what I'm saying? That shit gonna cost like probably 50. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Just I think 50 one way. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So I ain't know what was gonna happen. We get out there, all day, we wilding out, we still got the pictures, we having a fucking bunch of fun and everything. We out there wilding out, having a good time. And he came. And I was like, I looked at him and I was like, yo, I know what you did. Like I know, you know what I'm saying? He was just looking at me like, yeah, yeah, I'm here. And we bung him out. I don't think he knew his verse. We was trying to get him to do the verse. We was trying to get him to do the verse off of Take Me Alive, but he ain't know that shit. And that's another thing.
It's a great song, by
That's way. Another thing. Chris had did, a lot of people don't know this. Chris had did Take Me Alive and Nigga Please with Jay for volume, what it was, Blueprint 2. He did that. Take Me Alive didn't never come out. We was working and I said, damn. Like I ain't mind asking for shit. Like that's just how I was. Like you gonna tell me yes or no. Like that's just how I was. Like, and then like I just felt like I could. I just always voiced my opinion, you know what I'm saying? Whether it was, you know, and I was like, Jay, like, I want to use that record. You know what I'm saying? I want to use that record for Tough Love. That shit was just sitting. Like, he didn't use it for Blueprint 2. You know what I'm saying? We was all on As One, and Chris had a record with him by himself, Nigga Please. But they recorded Take Me Alive for Blueprint 2. Shit was just sitting around. I was like, Jay, like, I want to use that for the album. I want to put a verse on it, and I want to use it for the album. Go ahead, you can have it.
Wow.
Like a lot of people don't know that. You feel what I'm saying?
Wow.
That's why he on there and say that verse is the verse. And then he had two verses because it was his song. But you know what I said? I said, I'm going to go first. I want to keep both Jay verses on that motherfucker. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Because I could have snatched them. You know what I mean? He just let me do whatever I wanted to do with it. And that's why he say on the joint, I got to help little Chris, because that was just dumb too on the song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
Can you talk about how Tough Love was put together, the song?
Chris, that's when I wasn't coming around, wasn't going to the studios. I wasn't just wasn't on everybody type time. I was just on my own time. And Chris was, Chris, like, when it came to the music, he kind of looked up to me, whereas though he older than me 21 days. His birthday is March 9th. Mine is the 30th of March. But he kind of looked up to me in far as making the music. Like, he couldn't tell me certain things, or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he'd feel crazy if he, you know what I mean? He had to tell me something to do with anything with the music. Because at the end of the day, I got him started and I brung him to the shit that took us up there. You feel what I'm saying? So yeah. He always, like, he know, like, you feel what I'm saying? So I think he feel like he didn't really want to ever tell me how he felt. But I knew how he felt because he would talk to my brother. He would talk to certain people. Mm-hmm. And because Chris would do things like, if he feel like that he ain't going to say it to you, he going to say it to somebody that know.
It will get back to you.
So he did the Tough Love song. I don't know if it was Tough Love at the time. I don't think it was called, I don't know. Matter of fact, it was, because he said it in the beginning. So it was called Tough Love. So he did that record. I wasn't nowhere to be found. He did that record. Rest in peace to my homie LA that passed away. He played the record for me. We was doing an N1 concert on Delaware Avenue, the whole state property. I remember like it's yesterday. Remember N1?
We had DJ Set Free up here.
So N1 was popping. We had LA came in the car with me. He was like, "Yo, I want to play something for you." He was like, "I want to play something for you." So he played the record for me. Chris was like somewhere else, like down the street or somewhere else, but we was just like on the side. He played it for me. He was like, "I think you should put something on here." It was two verses, just how it was, just Chris, whoever. We wasn't recording no album. We ain't had no album in the making. Just Chris was just recording records. And I went up to Baseline like 2 days later. I got on a train by myself. Me and Guru just in there. Just like I said, I don't know who budget was open, who was recording. I just happened to come to the studio when nobody was there. Just me and Guru. I laid the verse. And like I said, I tell this all the time. Like, this is one of my dopest moments with Jay. I laid the verse and then he walked in. And the first thing he said to me was, "Did you hear that joint Chris did? You know what I'm saying?" I said, "Yeah, I heard it. Guru dropped that. Played the shit." Then my verse come on. Jay was just like, "Wow, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. he didn't know that was coming. Like, you know what I'm saying?" That's he's super just dope. Like, yeah. So just, and they get him, like, just me and him. And like that moment, like, you know what I'm saying? Because I was going through a lot at the time. And, you know, it was just dope, man. Like, words can't even express that feeling.
Did that change anything for you? Like, that moment of, like, okay, I should be putting more effort into all of this. I should be, you know.
Yeah, how hard was it to leave being outside, you know, alone?
No, because, like I said, when I knew it was about me and Chris, that's when I was like, you know what I'm saying? That's that. Like, I think Youngest in Charge changed everything.
What did Ryan Press mean to you?
Shit. Well, you know, that's Chad's partner. So he was there. He did everything but record and make beats. You know what I'm saying? He was right there. They lived in an apartment together, just like you guys.
Yeah.
They lived in an apartment together. So it was like, we was together all the time. You know what I'm saying? We was together all the time, recording records and down the basement, doing all types of shit. Like, that's just forever, man. We would have girls spend a night, and we would let girls get on songs, do little parts and sayings for us, and up all night messing with the girls. And we was just like, yeah, it was just
crazy. Who had to handle those clearances?
Yeah, what?
It was just crazy.
Did they have an ASCAP?
Yeah, like, it was just like, we got girls. It's a girl on Brothers from Another, like, that I'm still cool with to this day. She say this little shit on YG Party, like, just having fun, just trying shit out.
As you and Chris got more experience in the game, how do you think that your roles sort of grew?
Well, like I said, I was playing them offices a lot. I was playing them offices real a lot. So that's how I got to start writing treatments for videos and doing things like that, and coming up with different ideas for marketing and promotion for us, and as far as what we going to wear in this album cover, just all types of things. It was like, I looked at it like, this is our story. This where we come from, the city. This what we like. This is our vision. So why not be a part of the, you know, the process and just coming up with different ideas and different shit, because, you know, we making the music. Like, a lot of people at companies, you know, they just go off of what they know and what they like or whatever. But certain people don't come from where you come from. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And do you think that you both had the same vision?
Chris wanted to do music. He wanted to do music. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to do music. Like, and that's his thing. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to do music, stay in the studio and grind. And that was his thing. And like, and at that time, like, that's that. I got into other things because I seen that it was money in other things too. Like, even though I loved it, like, it was money in other things. Like, that's how Jimmy was. Jimmy was kicking the fuck up off Rockefeller. That nigga was like,
he was engineering.
Engineering, yeah. Getting yeah. checks, executive producing fucking albums, directing the videos, just kicking
acting
up.
Acting in Paper Soldiers.
Yeah, he was yeah. just kicking up, getting checks. I was just looking at it. And then, like, certain executives at these companies, like, they get paid guaranteed. We put all the work in, blood, sweat, and tears, make albums, do promo radios, night and day, blood, sweat, and tears. And we're not guaranteed nothing. We can put out the album and flop. We don't get no shows or nothing. Them people that came up with the marketing plan or you, whoever, they get their check. That shit is a guarantee. So I said, damn, let me try to figure some other ways out too.
Because
I just love the business too. I love the hustle. Mm-hmm. So the hustle just was always in me from being in the streets.
So you saw that like, you know, in person when you went to Def Jam. Like, you saw yeah. people who like...
Because we was so like, we was family. So it ain't like you just work for a Fortune 500 company. You just up there doing your job, and you know, you go home and you see the big person you walk. You don't never see the big person you walk for. You just look at the name on the board and you don't know who the fuck he is. You come do your job and check in and check out. It was different. We was family, you know. I used to sit in Manuel and Shaka and Sherry cubicle and mess around with them all day, what they doing, shit going on with us. I'm picking stuff out. I was just right there. And we was just blessed to have that opportunity and that freedom, and just we had a lot of input on our own careers. Like, we was free to do it. They allowed us to do so much more mm-hmm. than any other probably company would. And our CEOs was like us. You know what I'm saying? They come from where we come from, like that type of shit. So it was just open season. Mm-hmm.
So when Rockefeller splits up, mm-hmm. what did you do with all of your Rockaware clothing?
I still got shit to this day packed up. I still got Rockaware shit in the plastic, Team Rock shit in the plastic.
Gotta break that out.
I got all types of S dots. Yeah. I got a CEO sneaker that Dane brung out with Nike that I ain't never seen nobody with. He signed them shits for me. I still got them shits.
How many Pro Keds do you have?
I got a lot of Pro Keds. I got the Pro Keds.
How big is your
SP
storage space?
Remember, I had the Rockefeller the Adidas? Adidas and shit. Yeah. That was my first time wearing them. I had them probably 12, 13 years. That was my first time wearing them that day.
Mm, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I will say, you know that, you know, the market value drops as soon as you take the car off the lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But you got some motherfuckers, they wear sneakers and still sell them for a lot.
Oh, yeah. No,
like
for sure.
Yeezys and certain shit. Yeah.
When there was the split, did you go back to Philly and try to reassess, like, where your career was and what moves you wanted to make?
Nah, it was just, I really don't know. It was just like, I started getting back in the streets a lot, doing dumb shit, getting in trouble. I really don't remember, like, because I remember when me, Chris Freeway, and Bleak was on Best of Both Worlds tour, and Jay brung us back to one of the shows. Jay brung us back to his dressing room, and he was like, you know, he about to make it, you know, a decision. He want us to be a big part of his decision. Then, you know, Jay, like, it wasn't really no tug of war. Dame didn't know what he was going to do at the time, from my recollection. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He didn't know what he was going to do, if he was going to do music, clothes. He didn't know what was going to happen or whatever. Yeah. We was on tour with Jay, so it was just like a given. You know what I'm saying? Jay ready to do a situation, ready to be the president of Def Jam, ready to have Rockefeller to himself. It was just like a given. Dame wasn't reaching out to us, trying to get us to come over there. It wasn't. So after that, Jay was the president. Then we start working on Brothers from Another.
And you guys shot the XXL cover with the Carter administration.
Yeah.
Had you met LeBron before then?
Yeah, LeBron been around us forever.
Yeah.
Like I said, I got fucking high school jerseys with LeBron autographed on it. LeBron, we used to sleep in the same hotel rooms and all that on the floor together and all that type shit.
You were just like
this. Yeah, I'm going to a game. He plays Sixers this Friday. Shout out to my guy Rich. You know, his agent. That's like
Rich Paul. Yeah.
Rich Paul. That nigga was on my couch, and Rich Paul was on the couch in my hood with me. Like, right before Brown went back to Cleveland, and he was like, "Neef, we going back to Cleveland." Like, I knew super duper early. Like that's.
And you ain't tweet that out.
That been like I said. They from, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that rock, they started off with us. So it's just like, that never go nowhere. Like, you can't, certain shit you just can't front on, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can't you front or change on a motherfucker that, you know what I'm saying? Y'all both came up when y'all ain't have shit. Like, it's pictures with us and Brian, like, fucking kids, like, on Rock the Mic tour and all that shit together. We used to bring him out with us. When LeBron. Can't Stop, Won't Stop, come on, Brian, you come out with us. I got pictures, I show, you know what I'm saying?
Crazy.
Yeah, when he's young, and me and Chris got his high school jerseys on and all that. He coming out with us. I still got them shit signed.
What about Kobe?
Kobe. That's from Philly, man. You try to throw a jab, try to do that to Kobe, man. Kobe is Kobe. One of the greatest of all time. You know what I mean? Lord Marion, man. You know, he's just apart from Philly, man.
Yeah.
He rep for the city, though. You see what he did when the Eagles, you know what I mean? Yeah. You see what he did when the Eagles got there.
How long you known Kevin Hart for?
Long time. Kev been around for a long time since Paper Soldiers.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, but he give it up though. He don't front on like that. He know Dash gave him them opportunities and them platforms early in the game. And he deserve everything he get because he very talented. You know what I'm saying? Cool dude. Still when we see him to this day, all love, man. Yeah. All love.
When we had Maul, Biggs's, you know, brother Maul, on the podcast, he was talking about how there would be like, you go to the bowling lanes and like Kevin Hart and Big Face would just like go after each other just like snap on each other.
Nah, stop, man. That's what they do. That's their shit. So, you know.
Chris had the was it Division One deal that he did with Rico Love. Yeah. Uh-huh. That was a solo deal for him.
Right.
And you guys were not working together then?
We was working together, but like I said, I started getting into the streets and doing different things and, you know, just going down, you know what I'm saying? Some of my old past and all that.
So did you consider yourself at that point a former rapper? Were you just like...
No, because I still did music. We would still get shows and stuff like that, but I wasn't really like on it how I've been on it for the last couple of years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't on it like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, long as I was still getting money, taking care of my family, like, that's all that was important to me. You feel what I'm saying? Like, the fame, it was cool, but I ain't tripping off that. I've been somebody way before that shit. You feel what I'm saying? Like, getting money, anything, that shit, that's all that shit gonna come with it. You feel what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, all that shit gonna come with it.
But did you want to continue doing music?
I don't know. Like, I used to, this the funny thing, man. A lot of people don't know this. Chris had a situation that he was going to do with Rockefeller, with Jay, on a solo joint.
What year are we talking here? Like, or what era?
This may be probably a little bit, maybe probably a year or half a year after Brothers From Another.
Wow.
I started getting in the streets. But one thing, every meeting Chris had, far as Rockefeller, and you can ask him, I talk to Jay. I speak to Jay about that. He used to let me this, you know what I'm saying? So that's how me and Jay relationship was so like crazy, because we would just keep it real, but we would just keep it real about everything. You feel what I'm saying? I remember like, cause this when Jay was president. And because I remember times I used to wait on Jay. I remember he was taking a bunch of fucking meetings at this time. I remember when he first had the first meeting with Nas, I was there. I remember Carlene and I'm like, yo, Neef, you just so persistent, like on everything you were doing. Like, because I think about it to this day, I don't got run doing that type of shit for DMC. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I used to go in, Chris would be down the fucking hall somewhere. And I used to go in there and play his music that he was recording for Jay. Hmm. All the time. Yeah, ask him for it. Hey, he'll tell you. But that, you know what I'm saying? But that's why we worked. It was like the shit that I didn't want to do, he would do, and the shit that he didn't want to do, I would do. Mm-hmm. That's why it was just, it worked. It used to work like that. You feel what I'm saying? All the time. Like sometimes Chris might have a whole record together and say, Neef, just come and do these parts right here. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So one hand washed the other. Cause he was important to the Young Guns just as much as I was. You mm-hmm. feel what I'm saying? But his thing was music. You know what I'm saying? That's his shit. You feel what I'm saying? It's so many records that he had already that I came in and just felt spots on. You feel what I'm saying? A lot. So many. You feel what I'm saying? So he very like, that's never take that away from him. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's just some things he didn't want to do. Just like in the beginning, I ain't want to do a lot of shit. You know what I'm saying? So that's just how it was.
In the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of you Philly guys together. We've seen a lot of pictures. We've seen a lot of interactions. And people get excited. People still love State Property.
For sure, for sure.
Do you still love State Property?
Yes, I do. I do. I really do. That's why my last project, Forever Do Me 8, I got the whole State Property on a record called Game of Thrones. It's one of my favorite records that we ever did. You know, I came in with a plan, like, and it happened. I wanted Sparks to talk in between everybody. Wanted to let everybody, you know, do their shit. And from that, we performed. We did so much after that. You know, even the BET Cypher we did it on. You know what I'm saying? Just everything happened for a reason. It was like, for me, it was like the first time all seven members was on a track together. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. Do you feel like you have more of a leadership position now? Do you think you've grown into being more of a leader?
Always been like that. Always. Always. You know what I'm saying? It's just I guess from the upbringing and just being around older motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I just always just had that mentality. And, you know, I don't know how to explain it. Just always been there like that.
Yeah. If we were to do a State Property live podcast the way that we did the Rockefeller one,
yeah,
who are some people that would have to be there?
I would think, damn, it's like everybody that y'all know of, like Wayno, Big Face, Gary, Hip Hop, Lenny,
Sherry.
Shaka, Carlin. It had to be so many.
We pull Sadiq out.
Yeah, Sadiq, Stevie G, like I said. It's so many people that, like.
Mark Byers.
Yeah, Mark Byers, Sharon.
Eric. Mark and Sharon. We could. Bean's mom, the source.
Yeah, yeah. Miss Michelle. She did a lot for us.
Chad West.
Probably
had to fly people. Ryan Press out.
Yeah. It's so many people that was instrumental and got relationships with us, man, and really held us down and really raised our flag, you know? Like, that's really been a part of the brand all these years. They had input.
Bula.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So, is there a future for State Property?
It's always room, and it's always, like, you never know. It can happen. You know what I'm saying? We was just talking. Look at Rahsaan Shante just dropped a motherfucking Netflix movie and going on tours, and people like, I ain't half that age. Like, no. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's from, man. You got everybody. The one thing about your fans, they grow with you. You know what I'm saying? They grow with you. So long as they know you somewhere and you doing music, they gonna come out. Even if your shit, the old shit, they, you know, your new fans and your old fans. And that's one thing about having forever music, you know what I mean? And timeless shit. And shit that have really had an impact on people's lives, they gonna always come out and support you. One thing about this music, man, when they believe you and they buy into you and they love you, they gonna love you forever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because this music thing is strong, man. You a helping motherfucker. You a changing motherfucker life with you know, the feeling of these records, man. And you will help people out in certain struggles, and you give motherfuckers hope, and you give them belief, and you give them, like, motivation. You know what I mean? And you know, things that they can relate to. It does something to them. And same thing with me. Same thing with me with music. Like, that's how I feel about certain music. Some motherfuckers, I believe. It's certain times I look at people do concerts and certain music, and they give me the chills to this day.
Well, what's one song that Freeway did that you were just like, holy shit? Like, that speaks to me on another level.
I love, I'm a big Scarface fan, so I love, that's Don't Do It?
Oh, yeah, Baby Don't Do It.
Baby Don't Do It. That's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I got so many favorites for free, but I just like that's my shit. That's my shit. It give me a feeling. Cause he got so much shit. He got so much heart shit. Some deep shit.
Yeah.
He got so much deep shit.
Like, and we'll again, we're making sure that this is on the record when you come back to do your full episode for
No, I got you.
But that Philadelphia Freeway album meant so much to the two of us right here. Like it's just, it's a classic album.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Again, the full episode.
He had a $1 million budget, man. Look all the people he had on it. Look all the people he had on it.
Blessing, man, to be able to have all them guests. A lot of good memories, man.
That nigga had all the beats. He soaked up all the money, man. Me and Chris ain't had nothing to work with, man. That nigga had Mariah Carey,
Nelly,
Snoop. He had everybody.
Alhamdulillah.
Yo, but Forever Do Me Nine, like, what are you saying on there that people need to hear?
I've been rocking the bandana lately, man. I've been feeling like Pac, man. Mm. I've been feeling like me against the world, all eyes on me.
Mm. You're like the opposite of the young rappers out there, right? Yeah, now. Like, you respect Pac.
Yeah, no, hell yeah. What? Without a doubt. But that's just how I've been feeling, man. Pressure shows character. Every lesson is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you go through things to understand them, and like every day you're going to be tested in like certain things, you know. I guess like, you know, tough times, man, show people character, man, and who they are, and expose certain shit when certain shit happens. So, you know, but I think that's the best music, man. When you go through things, I think that's why Tough Love was so dope. Cause we was going through a lot, losing friends, and we was going through the struggle. We was in, you know what I mean? It was like we was there, but we wasn't there. Like, cause we'd be in the basement of Philippe's with Jay and all them eating, and we on private jets, and then we'd eventually go back home to that block.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So we wasn't like, you know, we was just seeing both sides. I guess they was showing us, lit, nigga, this is what y'all can have forever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but it wasn't guaranteed.
No, we had to put in that work. A lot of people was down that ain't never dropped albums, and so many people, like, shit. Like, a lot of people just know us. It was a lot of other motherfuckers that was around that never really, you know what I'm saying?
Never got their shit off.
So, you know, we humbled and we blessed and we thankful for all the opportunity. Because
the most important thing is we're so blessed to still be able to be doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this stage of our career, man, you know, it's a blessing to still be accepted by the people. And to still be able to drop new projects, mm-hmm. you know, and get light from it.
Yeah. For sure.
Because we about to cut you off. We just did a show. Me and Chris had a show 2 days ago in Camden, and Free popped up and came out with us. And word for word to this day, man. I'm talking about records that was 15 years old. Word for word.
They matter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
it was like kids when...
You know what I'm saying? So
I'm just glad that you guys, whenever you tour, you don't have to stay in the same hotel rooms anymore. We're so happy that you finally came up
thanks
here.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate y'all for having me.
Congratulations on the new project.
I need everybody that's listening, that's tuning in, to go get Forever Do Me 9. It's on all digital platforms. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter @Neef_Buck. Go check out my website, neefbuckmusic.com. Check out the clothing. I got brought y'all some shirts up here, too.
Thank you very much.
ForeverDoMeClothing.com. Make sure y'all go get some gear. You know what I'm saying? I brung y'all some t-shirts out.
Yeah, we get the gear, then we get the hose.
Yeah. Real talk, man.
Follow me on Instagram, too, @PhillyFreeway.
And we're going to see you soon.
Yeah, I'll be back soon.
Documentary soon?
Everything real soon.
All right. Yo, we appreciate you guys.
Thanks for having me, man. Love.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new bonus episode of A Waste Time with It's The Real Jeff. If you want to find out more about us, we are the Cheap Heat, Peckerhead, Marks, whatever. Eric and Jeff, we're known as It's The Real. This podcast is called A Waste of Time with It's The Real. And if people want to find out more about our book that's available on Amazon, our upcoming shows, like the one we're doing on June 2nd at the Roots Picnic down there in Philly, if people want to find out like what we look like, where can they go?
I don't know. You can just... That's a pretty good description of everything that's going on. But you can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com, no apostrophes, no spaces. We are also on iTunes. Search for all of our old episodes there. All of our new ones will be there as well. You can also go to soundcloud.com/waste of time. We are also available on Stitcher,
Pod Bay, I think, is a thing. Pod Bay, right? There's a lot of options out there. Just go stream and subscribe and make sure you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, choose one. You can also listen to our music. It is available on all digital streaming platforms, including SoundCloud.com/It's The Real, but you can also go to Spotify, where we are killing it.
Yeah, and by the way, Apple Music, Tidal, Pandora, Google Play, all the rest have our music as well. So there's no excuse for you not to listen to our music, because it's super dope. I was listening to our song with Currency and Smoke Dizza called Sugar High on the plane ride down here.
Well, shouts to you.
Shouts to me. I listen to it on Spotify, but hey, you know what? That's just me.
Yeah, to each their own. I was watching animal fight videos on Netflix. Oh. Shout out to The Hunt. Shout out to David Attenborough. I would also say that you can follow us on all social media platforms as well. We are at It's The Real on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are also It's The Real on Reddit. We are It's The Real on Snapchat. And we are It's The Real on Twitch.
God, this is like super confusing.
Yeah.
Jeff, this podcast isn't going anywhere unless we make sure to shout out the people who listen, the people who promote, the people who spread the word, and let them know that we appreciate them. So, Jeff, who do you appreciate?
I want to shout out our friend who we've never met and know very little about. Ain't No Jigga.
Oh, well, you know what? That's fair. That is an actual friend. I didn't know where you were going with that. I was like, what kind of friend do we barely know and have never met?
Well, Ain't No Jigga, who is the Jay-Z fan account, but knows everything about Jay-Z before the internet does.
Almost before Jay-Z knows.
It's almost as if it is Jay-Z.
So maybe Jay-Z is our friend?
We're friends with Jay-Z.
You know, guys.
Jay, come on the podcast.
You decide. Jeff, I want to shout out Calfani. He's at @1Calfani on Twitter. He's also, for anyone looking to find him, on Instagram, Calfani_. So, really, he's not trying to be found, but whatever. I put his business out there.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that he appreciates our AKAs. Shout out to him for letting everybody know that our AKAs are running it out there. Jeff, new episode on Monday with Wale from Wale Mania, from WrestleMania, from New Orleans, Louisiana. Shout out to everyone down here, all you wrestling fans. We'll see you in the ring. As always, Jeff, not for real, for real.
Sure.
See you guys next week.